Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. With politics taking center stage at next month's legislative session, we are pleased to have in our studio someone who knows a great deal about that process, our former Lieutenant Governor and the 2010 Democratic candidate for Governor, Diane Dennisch. Diane Dennisch, welcome to the program.
Happy to be here.
Diane, later in the show, I'd like to get a preview of the upcoming session from you. But first, I'm sure many listeners would just like to catch up with you, find out how you are, what you've been up to. So what's been going on?
You know, minding your own business is really stressful. So I've spent the last couple of years working to help on the early childhood funding in that community, trying to help with the land grant permanent fund constitutional amendment proposal. Maybe we'll talk about that later. I've also been spending some time on the board of the new nonprofit health insurance plan, New Mexico Health Connections, part of the Affordable Care Act, created by New Mexicans for New Mexicans, and people can sign up there. It's a nonprofit and has a totally different approach than a for-profit insurance plan. Spending time with my family and children and really traveling a little bit around New Mexico, of course.
Well, I know you were involved in the forces against the referendum on abortion because I got a robocall from you.
Yes, and I was very happy that we were successful in that effort. I've been a longtime pro-choice health, women's health, reproductive rights advocate since way back before Roe v. Wade actually became the law of the land. I was a young woman then.
So what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, is talk briefly about the 2010 race. And, you know, they say politics isn't beanbag, but that race seemed to really have a sharp edge to it. And maybe just all races now have a sharp edge to it. Is that just part of politics now? You just have to accept that that's how it's going to be?
Well, just as a little historical context, I was the party chair in 2000 when John Dendall, who recently passed away, was also the Republican chair. And I thought he brought a new mean-spirited way to the politics of New Mexico. I dealt with him a lot. It was a little bit of a surprise to me. So what happened in 2010 had become sort of the norm. I thought it was mean-spirited in many ways because it really wasn't a campaign about ideas. It was a campaign about Bill Richardson.
Yeah, the sort of idea was that allegations had come to light, that Richardson had allegedly engaged in pay-to-play. And then the thought was that candidate Martinez propelled was that somehow you knew or should have known about what was going on. And then how does one say, well, I didn't? I mean, it's a pretty tough thing to do. How do you convince someone?
Right. And there wasn't a way to make that message credible, even though as lieutenant governor, you can design your own focus on issues, but you're not in the governor's office on a day-to-day basis, working with the governor, knowing about those private meetings or any of those. What now we know were simply allegations. Nobody's been really prosecuted for this, and the governor hasn't been exonerated completely, but a lot of the hype around that was manufactured.
Even those allegations were about his campaigns, I think, when he was chair of the Democratic Convention in 2004.
And his
really candidacy had nothing to do with his governorship.
Right, his candidacy for the presidency.
Right.
And I'd like to go on record as saying I was for Hillary Clinton in 2008. But sometimes what are allegations become, in fact, believable because they're said over and over again in the media.
And it's interesting, in the Heilman book, the recent book, Double Down, and, you know, we all sort of thought Romney was so eager to run for president, but just for these kinds of reasons, apparently, he wasn't very eager. He didn't want to go through what he knew he was going to go through.
You know, that raises a really good point in that I believe that the damage that's done by these kinds of campaigns is that we're going to be unable to attract the most visionary, high-quality, thoughtful people of all stripes in both parties because of the nature of the meanness of politics these days.
But it was sort of interesting what candidate Martinez did, because she moved to the middle from her primary campaign, sort of adopted a middle-of-the-road position on education, on school reform, on school funding. And because we were in the middle of what looked like a recession, you couldn't really propose major spending. So it was hard to get on the offense. It seemed, at least that seemed to me, like, as an observer, that to be the situation.
Well, I think she may have moved some to the middle. I debated her at El Dorado High School
in the education debate.
And I thought her answers were pretty shallow and not really well-informed. But that works sometimes. You know, a 30-second commercial is 76 words, and you have to compact your ideas or your thought into 76 words in a 30-second commercial. So they were good at doing that. But most of their message was, you would have thought my last name was Richardson.
Richardson. Yeah. It was Dennis Richardson. Right.
And I, you know, that's politics, and she won and I lost. But that doesn't mean there aren't things to work on. Sometimes pushing forward under an administration like this means pushing back on an administration like this and thinking about the progressive ideas that should be moving ahead.
And you've obviously, you know, as opposed to John Dendall, who you mentioned, who really dropped out of politics, I think, when he lost that 2006 campaign, you've stayed active.
I've stayed active, and, you know, John left New Mexico, and he left behind kind of a nasty letter about New Mexico and its people and what they were willing to settle for. This was his home. It's my home. We have different approaches to that. I love New Mexico, and I understand politics. I think I'm a little maybe just pragmatic enough to be able to say that's politics. Whether it's real or denial, I really believe that 2010 was not about me personally. It was about Bill Richardson and some of his policies. But I've been a longtime advocate in many of these arenas, small business, early childhood, social justice issues, and I plan to stay active in those issues.
So you're a good person then to talk to about the upcoming legislative session because you've stayed active. And I've got this theory I'd like to sort of test with you about the upcoming session, and that is when you understand the politics of the different players, the politics of Governor Martinez, the politics of the House, particularly the House Democrats, and the politics of the Senate Democrats, my theory would be there's not much likely to happen. But let's go through it and talk about it, and let's start with the governor. What do you see as her likely agenda? Let's start with the budget. What do you see as her likely budget vis-a-vis, say, the Legislative Finance Committee?
Well, certainly I think she's going to retain her approach to a high reserve. I think she's going to try for some more tax reforms as it relates to the budget. And I don't believe she's going to prioritize the important things such as making sure the health exchange works or making sure that we are putting more money into Birth to Five and education. In fact, I'm worried that education might get trimmed because some of our tobacco money is going away. She said she's going to put retention on. It will be coupled with a dollar figure, third grade retention. I think those will be some of her highest priorities. One thing I want to say, she's going to try to make the job training funds permanent. I think that is not a bad idea. Every year they have to come back and get job training funds for companies. I think that having job training funds and not having to fight that battle every year, if you don't have to, making it a part of the budget is a good idea.
No, it's interesting because if you look at her budgets in the past three budgets, and you compare them to the Legislative Finance Committee proposals, they're not that different. And it seems to me that her budgets are almost structured deliberately that way, and that gives her political cover and allows her to say, I'm bipartisan. I'm coming very close to what the legislature wants. What's the problem?
Well, one of the things that the governor's done is she hadn't really met the guidelines for when she has to produce her budget. So she waits. The legislature puts out their budget earlier, and it's very easy for her to...
She then structures her budget around the Legislative Finance Committee proposal.
Bill Richardson and I had a different idea. We were very aggressive about our budget and was out there getting support for the things we thought were important. I remember when we did four-year-old pre-K. Once that was, we decided how much was going to be in the budget for that, and we went after it. And we tried to develop our support and our relationships with people to make sure that that happened.
But if you're thinking about her situation, I mean, she's got what looks like a 62% approval rating, a very high approval rating even among Democrats. So I would think the biggest thing she could try to accomplish in this legislative session is not alienate Democrats, is to look bipartisan.
Well, that's going to be the overriding influence on the session is the 2014 election year. And you'll see it in her proposals. You'll also see it in the House.
Well, let me just mention, if you've just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to have on the show today Diane Denish. Diane Denish is our former lieutenant governor. She also ran for governor in 2010, and we've been talking about the upcoming legislative session. And maybe you could just identify for listeners who Jay McCluskey is.
Jay McCluskey is Susana Martinez's political consultant. He's been dubbed the fifth floor of the Capitol because most people think that she doesn't do anything without his stamp of approval, as opposed to the other way around, that he tells her what positions they should take and not she tells him what she wants to do.
It's funny because people said the same thing about Karl Rove. Karl Rove was allegedly, you know, Bush's guru, and McCluskey has really been compared, I think, to Karl Rove. And, I mean, I think we should say that he's been, if he's been giving the advice, it's been darn good advice because she has been very successful as a politician, wouldn't you say?
They've been very shrewd about how they've done things. Just now you're starting to see a little bit of a, what I'd call a chink in the armor. The approach to behavioral health and the shutdown has damaged her credibility in terms of that, although she hasn't been the person out there defending that. 10 of her 21 cabinet secretaries have already left this administration, and they've had lots of turnover, things like that. And so there are things that happen to every governor but are starting to kind of chip away at her support. I might remind you that Bill Richardson was also at 62% about this time in his administration.
You know, it's funny because the comparisons are striking because Bill Richardson was very popular and he seemed to also have right away national ambitions. And when we look at Bill Richardson's travel schedule and we look at Susana Martinez's travel schedule, they both spent a lot of time, particularly right before the next election, out of state helping other Republicans. And Martinez is being named a lot as a possible vice presidential candidate or perhaps some other office, right? I mean,
right.
She's really getting national notoriety, national press.
And that does parallel with Bill Richardson. He was thought about to be in the John Kerry, to be part of that ticket. He didn't get that designation, but that was the talk just about this time in our first administration. So he was one of the three or four people being vetted for the vice presidential job during that time, traveling around, raising money from out-of-state sources. All the things that you see happening are very parallel to what Susana Martinez is doing right now.
So do you think, I mean, this is sort of off subject, but I mean, do you think this is just the Hispanic influence? I mean, Hispanics now have such a major influence on politics in the United States. Richardson, of course, was a very popular Hispanic. Now we have Martinez, also a Latina and also a very popular Hispanic. Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems to be, and it also seems to me that if the Democrats at this point don't pick a Hispanic, they have a problem in terms of like the governor's race.
Well, I think that's true. I think that, you know, in New Mexico, we have such a long tradition of not just of multiculturalism, but of both Mexican-American and Spanish-American, with hundreds of years of history here. We're very used to the mix of Hispanic, Anglo governance. We've had Hispanic governors over time. We've had several. So I think that when you get outside, I've read some of the current governor's reports of when she speaks to business groups outside of New Mexico. And frankly, I wonder if we were living in the same state when she talks about New Mexico, talks about all these jobs. But really, New Mexico's losing jobs. We have lost jobs for the first 3 years. Just now are we barely starting to have job growth. So, you know, environmental protection has almost gone away completely in New Mexico. The attention to early childhood, which is an issue across the country, other states are picking it up and investing in it. She has no affinity for. She's against gay marriage. I mean, that train has left the station. On the social issues, she's really not up to speed with what's happening. She's not on the right side of history in some of those things.
Let me bring you back to the legislative session, because that's sort of where I interrupted you. And we were talking about the House, and particularly the situation in the House is really delicate at this point, because there's only a two-seat difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. And PACs affiliated with Governor Martinez were very aggressive in the last election, taking on Democrats where they thought they could win. And they picked off probably one of the biggest names in the Senate, Tim Jennings, President Pro Tem of the Senate. Just recently, they've showed some muscle with Winston Brooks. There was a very aggressive campaign against Winston Brooks. And then in the last election, back to 2012, there's the case of Andy Nunez, who was an independent who supported many of the governor's initiatives. And he was picked off by a PAC affiliated with Republicans. So it seems to me, as really you alluded to earlier, if you're a House Democrat, and every House Democrat's running this year, right? Mm-hmm. They all run every 2 years. You've got to be worried, because every vote you take is one you're going to have to defend when it comes election time.
That's right. So we'll see people, you know, calculating how they should vote or whether they should vote or what they should vote on the House side. And we know that someone will be keeping score on that issue.
Going now back to the House, if you're a House member, you can expect that. And I remember all the literature I got. You can expect that same kind of literature to come in against you. But what's confusing to me, to be quite honest with you, Diane, is the Nunez situation, because here's a guy who was part of the Martinez team in many respects, and yet the PAC, the affiliated with Martinez, went after him. So what's the message to Democrats? I mean, playing ball doesn't get you anywhere either.
Right. Well, the message actually is to Republicans and Democrats, who, if you think cozying up with her does any good for you, and actually Tim Jennings was very friendly to the administration. He's very conservative Democrat. He believed in some of the things they were for. They went after the person they really wanted to get was the majority leader, Michael Sanchez.
Yeah.
They were unsuccessful in that regard. But Senator Jennings lived in a much more conservative part of the state. But they lost a friend there in the Senate.
Well, they gained another one, mm-hmm. because basically, and if you want to go switch to the Senate really briefly, I mean, the Senate, nominally, the House is under the control of the Democrats. The Senate is under the control of the Democrats, and we have a governor who says that she wants bipartisan legislation. She wants to work with Democrats. So you would think, well, maybe there's some chance of Democratic legislation coming out of this session. But then, as we've already discussed, if you're a House Democrat, you've got to be worried about every vote. You've got to be ready to defend every vote. So maybe you want, if you're Ken Martinez, the House Majority Leader, maybe you want a conservative agenda for your members in order to keep control of the House. And then if you're in the Senate, there's really a conservative coalition that controls the Senate, correct?
That's true. But I think, to your point, the tactic itself is what people should say, you know, does it do you any good to be friendly to the administration if you're a Democrat? Because Andy Nunez started as a Democrat, then he switched to independent. He was very friendly. He carried her driver's license bill. He did all those things. And they still went after him. So there is no loyalty in terms of what they want to do. But in the House, because this is a budget session, because even though there'll be other things on the call, my guess is that they'll stick pretty closely to the budget and budget items, and they're going to avoid some of the things on the social agenda by just not bringing them up in committee or slowing down the process. It's 30 days, very hard to get anything. I don't know what will happen to third grade retention, but I don't think there's much appetite for third grade retention policies to be implemented. Hannah Scandera still sticks in people's craw in terms of whether her competencies and her lack of ability to be confirmed, and you know, she has her own problems. So if the speaker is wise, he will work with his committee chairs to see
Of the House.
Yes. He'll work with the committee chairs to see what legislation really needs to move and what doesn't, and try to protect his members.
So let me just mention, if you just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and we're here with Diane Dennis, and we're talking about the next legislative session. Diane was the lieutenant governor of our state for 8 years and ran for governor in 2010. And maybe I think what we could explain to listeners is how this conservative coalition in the Senate works. Maybe you could talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, certainly senators from out around smaller communities in New Mexico are much more conservative than those who come from, say, some of the larger Albuquerque, Santa Fe, maybe Las Cruces area. And in many cases, there are many times when there'll be bipartisan votes because the conservative Democrats, John Arthur Smith on the Finance Committee and John Sapien up in Bernalillo and some of those more conservative Democrats will join up with Republicans on both budget bills, tax cut bills that other progressive Democrats don't believe are good for New Mexico or good for the revenue stream. They'll partner up with them. And so it doesn't take many votes. Four or five votes can switch over. Even though the Democrats...
Yeah, I think it's like 24-17. Yeah. So if four conservative Democrats in the Senate switch over and vote with Republicans,
right.
then really it's the Republican agenda
right.
controlling the Senate. The House knows this. So in order to get those kinds of
right.
bills through, they have to pass similar legislation. So you end up with really relatively conservative legislation, even though nominally the Democrats are in control of the House and the Senate.
Exactly. And so that's how the coalition actually is successful. And it's been ever since I've been around, there's been various, the Cowboy Coalition in the House. When Aubrey Dunn was in the Senate, the conservative Democrats really pretty much controlled the Senate. When Manny was in there, it was a little more progressive. Then Manny got tossed out mainly because of his style, not so much because of his, social positions or anything else. But a few Democrats joined up with Republicans in order to take him out of the pro tem position, and then he ended up being in the majority leader. That was my first year as lieutenant governor. Manny Aragon was a majority leader. And they love to pull tricks on you the first year you're in there and make you have to cast a tie-breaking vote for something that's to your own advantage and all kinds of things.
You would cast a tie-breaking vote in the Senate, correct?
Yes, yes. And that's the only vote you ever cast, but they're out there, and usually they're on the most controversial things.
And so that's why if we look at the Senate budgets, the Legislative Finance Committee budgets, the Senate Finance mm-hmm. Committee budgets, and compare those to Governor Martinez's budgets— They're very close. And if we look at the corporate tax cuts that came through last year, that was really a Martinez proposal that was put through by the so-called Democratic leadership.
And actually, right? I've never seen anything like that happen in the 8 years I was there. I've never seen anybody vote on a budget or a tax bill without what they call a fiscal impact report. And they actually, disappointingly, Democrats and Republicans, were willing to vote on that bill without having the fiscal impact numbers on that bill. That's very unfortunate for the people of New Mexico.
So I'd like to go back and sort of test my theory a little bit with you because, I've seen all kinds of proposals for all kinds of so-called progressive legislation, increasing unemployment insurance, increasing the child care credit, a more progressive tax structure, both corporate and individually, need-based lottery scholarships. I mean, I could go on and on. But it seems to me if you look back at the last 3 years and you look at the politics of what's currently going to happen in this legislative session, it's very unlikely, I'm arguing, that to get any kind of progressive legislation, which maybe all the Democrats can really hope for, is gridlock, or what's going to maybe even more likely to happen than progressive legislation is conservative legislation.
Well, you don't have to argue that point with me. I think you're right.
Oh, okay.
And but what I will say is some Democrats are willing to settle for incremental progress, a little bit more investment here. But that's the way in many areas we've always done it, and we barely keep up. We don't really ever pull ourselves out of some of these bad categories in which our many people in New Mexico live. And, it's about attitudes. I mean, we have a human services secretary who says we don't have any hunger in New Mexico. This is about attitudes, about how you use state revenues and budgets to help people. And what do you think the role of government is? And it's really about separate philosophies. But the truth is that there's not enough progressive thinkers in there about the investment side on many fronts in the legislature.
But you've got a governor who believes in small government. That's a good polling position. The idea of high reserves, even in a bad economy with very little progress in unemployment, high reserves sells well politically. I mean, you've just got a situation where it's very difficult to buck this argument.
Right. Well, the average voter, they don't really pay attention to what the reserve situation is. That's not a meaningful argument.
Yeah, maybe we should
argument.
Say
the smaller
we've got
government.
About a $6 billion budget, and the rule of thumb is pretty much 5% reserves in most places. The governor has been pushing 10% reserves, but so has the legislative finance committee.
And there's
no difference again.
Yeah, they're actually up a little bit above 10% reserves. And, a progressive idea would be to say, let's take some of that money and invest it in infrastructure projects and put people to work so we can create some jobs. But you're right. They compromise and don't really fight for that. And don't forget the conservative Democrats are actually the people who have put together, say, the Senate Finance Committee, so that there's very little hope of anything that spends money getting through. John Arthur Smith is the most conservative person.
He's against new programs. He's against new spending.
Right. And he and Mary Kay Papin, who's also very conservative, they can put together the membership of that committee. So that, in fact, now they have it, so it's an even-numbered committee. And if one Democrat votes with Republicans, things die because it's a tie vote.
And all you take is one Democrat would be John Arthur Smith to switch it.
Exactly.
So we're nearing the end of the show, Diane. And I'd like to sort of circle back to where we started, because you were one of the first names mentioned as a possible mayoral candidate in the Albuquerque mayoral election. You were also one of the first people mentioned to run for the open Senate seat that Martin Heinrich ended up winning. So I'm wondering, and you're still interested in politics, I'm wondering, are you still thinking about throwing your hat in the ring, or is electoral politics something that's in the past now for you?
You know, if you've been in public life, it's never in the past. And so, I try to think about what the opportunities might be and what's realistic and match those two up. And in the meantime, work for what I think are the best candidates to be elected, and not just in New Mexico, but I work with women senators running for the U.S. Senate, trying to increase those numbers. And so it's not in the past for me, but it may not be in the future either.
Well, listen, thank you very much, Diane Dennisch. I would also like to thank my producer today, Joe Green. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of this show are downloadable on iTunes. Archives of all my past shows are available at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.